You're listening to the Builderpedia podcast, the only podcast that takes you on the whole property journey, from planning, design, building, selling, and everything in between. Along the way, we'll introduce you to our network of friends and colleagues who are experts in their field. Now, here are your hosts, Matt and Jeannie from Ballast Point.
Welcome back to our Buildopedia episode. It's been a while since we've last recorded, Matt. In today's episode, we'd just like to update you on how we've been going with getting our episodes lined up. Matt, how do you think we're going?
Well, we thought it would be easier to convince people to join. We thought we had a great idea and a great podcast. And so we put it together. We sent out invites to people we thought would be keen. Some of them said they were keen, but what happened next? Not a lot.
Well, upon reflection, it makes sense though, because we need to put more episodes up, or at least get, you know, the train going and get ourselves uploaded onto, you know, Spotify and, you know, just get ourselves out there first before I think people will be more interested to join a podcast that exists.
Yeah, so we sort of caught up last week and did, all right, well, we're getting nowhere trying to invite people on, so let's just do it. Let's just keep going. So here we are.
Yeah.
We're just going to start putting episodes out. And if you're a design professional or a development professional or a construction professional, Buildopedia is trying to tie all those things together in residential construction, residential development, from purchase of a home to development and through to sale.
Yeah, we're going to cover all of those topics, but fundamentally it's for the client's experience. It's to educate our clients as professionals what they should expect when, you know, embarking on the build process. So yeah, I think it's invaluable to get all these different types of guests on and share their views.
So please come on the next episode. But we changed tack, right? We started taking the clients of a journey. We've gone with plan B now. We're going to make it topical and current. We're just going to see who we get and roll with it and not stress about having
a guest for every single episode.
Exactly. Well, not a guest for every single episode, but also we're not going to particularly do it in order. We had this grand vision of starting from property purchase and then looking at pre-development and pre-design and design and choosing an architect. But we're going to start today with what is the question every client we have is asking, the same bloody question. The same topic comes up again and again. Can anyone guess what it is? It's building cost. Building cost is the question that everyone is asking. So why not create an episode around what's happening in the market post-COVID?
Yeah, totally.
Or tail end of COVID, wherever we are in COVID, post-material shortage, but still in labor shortage and interest rates going up, and yet a problem with a lack of rental properties and lack of supply, and then immigration picking up, and what a sandwich of factors. But what every client is aware of is that where we had a contingency a year ago on their projects for cost escalation, design, client changes and other factors, engineering problems, that whole contingency has been eaten up by cost escalation. So everyone's had to recalibrate their expectations. And that's the harsh reality. Mm. We've had a 20% cost escalation in the last 12 months, give or take. It's very lumpy. Some costs have gone up by a factor of two, maybe not quite factor of two, but some things are ridiculously more expensive. Some things have gone up by 10%. Some, you know, it averages out according to the best information we get from our quantity surveyor. It's 20%, give or take. Mm-hmm. So that's where we are. We're at a new reality. And of course, the question is, what's next? And no one really knows.
Yeah. And I guess from doing research for this episode with all these alarming headlines, a big question that I had in my head was, is the building industry collapsing? What do you think about that? Because I guess that's the impression that you can easily get when you're looking in the news.
Well, it's far from collapsing, but certainly there's a lot of people who are in trouble. And the biggest problem in the building industry is lump sum contracts signed 6 or 12 months ago, which seem to have a lot of fat in them. Well, price escalation has eaten that up and more. So there are definitely builders out there who can't fulfill their commitments because they thought they were killing it 6 months ago, and now they're struggling to get jobs finished. And the biggest factor is you can't shop around like a lot of builders used to. You can't shop around for the lowest price because there is no lowest price. It's hard to just get someone to give you a quote for some item. So you don't have that lever anymore.
Aside from the, you mentioned that builders would usually shop around and look for the lowest price. Is another factor causing builders not to be able to move the fact that they would used to do fixed contracts in which the margin is undisclosed and they thought that that's what you mean by they thought they were making a killing,
Oh yeah.
and in that sense they can't renegotiate
Yeah.
with the client?
No, and they and what we're finding is where we're carrying a subcontractor with a fixed contract, they're pulling every lever they can in every they're trying to pull every variation out of the air to get their margin up. And unfortunately, that does damage the relationship when you feel like, every time you sneeze, you're going to get hit with a variation. So, clients don't like it. And as a building contractor stuck in the middle of it, we don't like it. It's very apparent when someone's trying to make up ground. You can see that from a mile away.
Can you just define for our listeners what you mean by variations and how that side of things work?
Yeah, so if you've committed to a lump sum contract or a fixed price contract, you've essentially committed to delivering a house for a specific price. Come hell or high water, you're bound by that contract to deliver for that price with that scope that was identified. Now, a variation, of course, if the client changes their mind or something changes, then you need to vary the contract. If those goalposts for that works move, so does the price. And I think we've always operated on the basis of, I mean, we do charge variations, but over the and maybe in the past I've learned from mistakes in billing clients, and we have very strict criteria for charging variations. It's a specific decision by a client or their agent. They've got an architect working for them. That architect will make changes on the client's behalf to do something, add something, or change something. So that's the first criteria. The second criteria is that there is a real cost incurred. So if the change is a change of dimension that for an item that hasn't been set out yet, then it shouldn't incur a cost. But if there's more material, more labor, then there should be additional cost. So they're the two criteria. But we're finding that
Like you feel a little bit like the wool's being pulled over your eyes, or someone's trying to get more out of you than is fair.
Well, I think not everyone adheres to that criteria. So we've chosen to have that as our criteria because I think charging variations is a short-term gain for a long-term loss as well. So it's not just about making margin. It's about, well, what's the client's experience that is important to us.
And I guess following on the conversation with us choosing to apply our own criteria or choosing a particular contract type in the best interest for that long-term relationship for our clients, can you explain why we would favor open book contracts? Even though they are shown to actually reduce our profits, according to research that has actually been conducted, and from a business standpoint might not look by numbers to be in our best interest.
Yeah, so I guess broadly speaking, there's two main categories of contract when you're engaging a builder. There's a fixed price contract, which we've described already. And to summarize, it's a fixed scope of work for a fixed fee, fixed price overall. So if the scope doesn't change, the price doesn't change. The other type of contract is an open book contract, otherwise known as a cost plus contract. The reason we favored it in the past is that we found that it's a fairer way to operate because the risk is shared, and it's the risk of cost escalation and the risk of client change of mind not being penalized. It's all balanced up. I don't know if I described that the best way, but essentially,
That makes like it basically it builds in the space to move depending on the build process because it's so long and things happen.
Yeah,
It protects both sides.
exactly. And price escalation is a prime example. If we signed an open book contract, well, the client unfortunately absorbs the price escalation. But essentially, an open book contract is an arrangement where the client reimburses the builder for the cost that the builder has incurred to execute that project, plus a nominated margin, be that a percentage or a fixed margin for overheads, profit, and risk. So, well, the benefit for the owner is that if in a typically in a lump sum contract, in a fixed price contract, there's a much bigger risk margin charged by the builder because the builder has to make sure there's enough margin to cover cost escalation and things that fall between the cracks and unforeseen things that their estimator missed on the drawings. So that's all covered by a margin. And I think in an unstable environment like we have now, the risk margin is more like 15%, making a fixed price margin for a builder less like 15%, more like 30%. So because you don't know where the price is going, it's an unstable market. You don't know how much you're going to have to pay to get that bricklayer to come and lay bricks. So essentially, in a price contract, the risk is covered by the builder for a fee. In an open book contract, the risk is shared, but the price escalation risk is covered by the owner. We might be getting way too technical there, but
No,
that's.
I think, well, for a potential client, especially in this environment, as you mentioned, it's unstable and they're looking at different ways to, well, I guess it's constrained by the bank, right? Because you said that in this environment, the bank is only allowing fixed price contracts.
Yeah, so that's what we've found is in the last year, banks will not fund building projects unless the contract is fixed. So,
But I guess we, yeah, that is our current environment right now, but I guess we can get to explaining that a little bit later, but I just want to say that for our potential listeners listening in, with all these technical contract terms, I think they would, in their own interest, they would want to get to know what options are available to them and what the benefits and the drawbacks are. And we have covered off the benefits and the drawbacks for the fixed price contract, but also there are some drawbacks to the open book contracts as well, right? So the ones that I've written down are because the budget is not fixed, it may increase or decrease. So potentially what needs to happen is that the client would need a bigger budget or a bigger contingency to start off with. And also it's expensive if the build team or your subcontractors is incompetent. And this is coming off of the blog that we have written on our website. So can you talk a little bit more about the drawbacks and how to prevent those issues from creeping
yeah,
up?
so my experience with open book contract is that the biggest problem with them is that because the builder isn't bound by the price, they can be over-optimistic with the budget. And I think that's the fundamental problem with open book contracts. It's that the budget was never right in the first place. So what I would suggest if you are looking at an open book contract or a cost plus otherwise known as a cost plus contract, make sure you get an independent estimator that knows that sort of building, that is familiar with the standard that you want to build to, that works essentially in the industry segment. So if it's luxury residential, you want a specialist estimator who deals with luxury residential properties to help you create a budget, because that fundamentally, that's the biggest problem, is the budget was never right because it's easy to overpromise on budget if you're not bound by the budget. And this isn't because like builders are bad people. People are just inherently optimistic and we all want it to cost less and we think that we're going to find some savings. And architects, builders, clients, they're all the same. They want it to cost less. We want it to cost less, but there's a reality. And what we've been careful to do is to provide that reality check. And the reality check is a professional estimator or a professional quantity surveyor.
And it's important that it's an independent one as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So we make sure that when we hire, and I'm not, this isn't meant to be a plug for Ballast Point, but it's meant to be to help people sort of take, to give people advice, is whenever we get a report from a quantity surveyor, we give it in its raw, sometimes painful iteration to the client, you know, and we've had this discussion internally as a team where our architect, you know, one of our architecture team says, oh, it's the price is too high. I think he's over exaggerated or he's missed something, or it's actually simpler than the quantity surveyor thinks, or there's some, you know, it feels like there's something wrong with it. And I've always pushed back and said, no, you have to, doesn't matter if there's something wrong with it. We have to give that report to the client. Then we deal with what might be wrong with it. So there's a tendency to go, oh, look, we're over, it's, you know, if it particularly when it's over budget, well, has he allowed a bit too much here? Has he allowed a bit too much there?
Because I guess we're pretty married to the design, or, you know, whatever we gave the estimator, we're pretty committed to it and we want it to work. So maybe it's like a human logical fallacy where you're trying to find savings, or you think something's wrong with the cost when it's actually pretty accurate in some cases.
Oh, 100%. And the thing that's easy to spot in an estimate, otherwise known as a bill of quantities, the thing that's easy to spot is where something's overpriced or where something's doubled up. So they're easy to find. It's very hard to find something that's missing from your estimate that should be there. So it's easy to find the potential savings. It's a lot harder to find the things that maybe were underestimated. So you have to kind of go, well, it's a little bit swings and roundabouts, but we have to whatever we get, we have to communicate. It's an independent source of information, and whatever they come up with, even if we disagree with it, we need to communicate it. Maybe we communicate it to the client and then say, well, we can talk to the estimator about this part, because it could be legitimate. We could have, you know, already a quote for something that's come in between engaging the estimator, and we may actually have information that adjusts that price. But I've always been very firm in pushing back to say, no, whatever we get from the estimator, we pass to the client, and be it wrong, be it over, be it under, we need to preserve that independence. That's what that line is engaging us for. So
it comes back to the transparency that is very important to us.
Transparency is one thing, but it's actually subjectivity versus objectivity, right? You need an objective assessment. So by interfering, you're losing a degree of objectivity.
And moving to the second drawback, you know, we mentioned that it's expensive if you're in a cost-plus contract. If the build team or a subcontractor is incompetent and they're on an hourly rate, because they will have to come back and do patch-ups of, you know, something they might have messed up the first time around. So what are your tips and tricks to avoid this in the first place? You know, if you're entering into this kind of contract, how do you find the right people?
Oh, look, I think, like you said, it's a disaster if you have incompetent people and you're paying them by the hour. There's nothing worse in the world from a cost management perspective. There's nothing worse than incompetent staff paid by the hour. So I think that's where due diligence comes in, be it due diligence of the builder that you're about to engage and really doing your homework and checking in with clients, or due diligence with the subcontractors. And I mean, I found that, you know, you do need to ring references. When a subcontractor gives you three or four references, I try and ring all of them. And if I don't get through, I ask for four more. And sometimes it's surprising what they tell you. And so it's worth following up. You know, sometimes they give you references on the basis that nobody bothers checking references. And I think that's a big mistake. You do learn a lot. And sometimes it's the subtle things that are not said when you get a reference, when you do a reference check, that are really important. And it's about asking the right questions.
Yeah, that's great tips, and prevent people from walking into something that they perhaps weren't prepared for. I guess moving on to the final point that I wanted us to discuss is that we mentioned earlier how in the current environment, banks will only allow for fixed contracts. And, you know, this wasn't always the case, but you know, given the various reasons we just gave on why we prefer the open book or cost plus contract type, can you just talk about how we are managing that, given that it's not our go-to way of putting together a deal?
Yeah, well, so it's been interesting because most of our clients have known from the outset, and we're quite open about, you know, and it's on our website, you know, we do favor open book contracts. You know, they do come with an element of accountability, and we do go to great lengths to manage the budget as if it was, you know, it doesn't really change the way we manage a project, whether it's our money at risk or the clients. It's the same. If anything, like, I get upset when, if I would ever hear, well, it's a cost plus project, so we're not going to do something the way we would otherwise do it. That's you know, that's absolutely not right. In fact, you should take more care. You should approach every contract as though it was for your own house, basically. So, but I think the banks have pushed back on open book contracts. They won't fund projects with open book contracts. They definitely did before COVID and in the initial part of COVID, but they're obviously worried about cost escalation. But what that's doing is forcing builders into contracts that they wouldn't otherwise sign, and it's escalating the price. So it becomes a bit of a, what, how would you describe it? Like a loop, where that in itself is driving up prices, because builders are in a period of instability, so they have to raise their risk premium or their risk margin.
Yeah, because I read something from Brian Seidler, the executive director of the New South Wales Master Builders Association. He's saying that a small business goes in to do 3 or 4 homes a year and is hit with hikes of 40%, and they're absolutely bleeding. And I guess it's just a general kind of percentage, because later on in the article, he breaks down actually the price increase of material. It's 40% for steel and 35% for timber. So maybe he's just choosing that larger percentage just to be overall, you know, that's the kind of numbers we're looking at as far as builders and their losses.
Yeah, so I think he's picking the biggest number. Yeah, some things are definitely up 40%, even 50% on some things. Like we had a budgeted brick rate at $1.30, and the bricklayer said it was more like $2 a brick to lay. So it's very, like I said, it's very lumpy. Steel's up a lot more than, say, concrete. It's not 40% across the board. 40% is probably the upper end. So maybe he means up to 40% increase. But certainly there's an increase, and that's passed on to clients. But it's not just the material cost, it's also the increase in the risk premium that a fixed price contract attracts. Because whatever happens in the next year, if you sign a contract now for a build where you're going to need steel in 6 months' time, where is that price going to be? So that's the uncertainty, certainly drives up. Yeah.
So what is the practical considerations for clients, for yourself, you know, as the owner of a building business? What would you like clients to think about? I mean, potentially, would we need to renegotiate with our past clients? And, you know, like, what would you want them to know in order to make a decision on how they proceed?
So I think the first thing is that you have to be upfront with clients, and there's absolutely no point sugarcoating anything. You have to say, look, I'm sorry, but we had a 20% contingency on your project. Cost escalation was a part of that, but cost escalation has eaten up all of it before we've even commenced. So it's the new reality, and you can't pretend. The thing that you can't do, and the thing that architects sometimes like to do, is to go, well, we're sorry, there's a cost escalation, but we'll try and find savings somewhere. Well, you should have done that already if you've done your job right. And I'm a bit of a skeptic when someone says, let's do some cost engineering, let's find some savings. I just kind of say, well, they're going to be marginal. If I can find 20% savings, then either expectation has to change from very high spec kitchen to something like an IKEA kitchen. So something has to move greatly, or a part of the works has to be deleted, or you just haven't done your job right to begin with as a designer, because it should already be optimized. So if you've designed it in a way where we can save 20% by value engineering, then you haven't done your job properly, unless you mean deletion.
So we're approaching clients from the perspective that we already have everything optimized. And the first tip would be, from our standpoint, we need to be honest with our clients and be like, the 20% contingency has been eaten up already. And would the next sentence be, we need another 20% on top?
Well, yeah, I mean, you need to take contingency into the build. That's the reality. The other thing that needs to be said is, I can't predict where things are going to move. The Reserve Bank has failed to predict where things were going to move. So the senior economists in the country can't predict. So as a builder, I can't tell you where things are going. I think one thing we've had to do is, we can't leave clients adrift. We can't not build their house because their bank won't fund our preferred contract type. So we have to come up with a solution, but we have to be up.
Yeah, so we have to commit ourselves to a fixed price contract. So that's something that we have accepted. And in light of that, then would just the 20% contingency be enough for us to feel okay about the risk, or is there other considerations?
I think, you know, every builder prices risk differently. I think over time, builders that go out of business have the most likely cause, apart from just poor management, is probably failure to price risk. So yeah, we have to be, I mean, there's a lot of things that go into that equation for a builder, like how reliable do you think that client is? That forms part of the risk equation. So I guess we try to work predominantly with people who are reliable and who do pay their bills, and you know, we price the risk accordingly. But yeah, I think that's the reality. We have to be upfront and say, well, either you hold that contingency, if we're having to fix our price, well, we have to absorb that contingency. So it's just about having an open discussion and saying, well, it is what it is, not trying to pretend that things are better or different than what they actually are. And yeah, it's a short-term gain to get a client across the line and not be brutally upfront with them. You really have to be, you know, whichever contract, you have to be upfront and just say, look, it is what it is. This has happened. But I mean, the good thing is that it's in the news. People are aware. So it's not, you know, sometimes these things creep up and there's industry pressure, but it's not in the news and people are taken aback. So I think, you know, like the thing that I've noticed with conversation with clients is they kind of know what's happening. They know what to expect. You don't have to explain it from scratch, which makes it a lot easier, because you kind of don't have to break the news to them. They already know what's coming. I'd steer away from trying to predict anything at the moment. We've got a bizarre set of conditions where no one knows whether we're going to be in a boom or a recession, somewhere in between, and it's a funny one.
Well, and on that uncertain note, I think that's the end of our episode. It's been an interesting one, and I think it's good for our clients, at least, you know, from a practical working knowledge standpoint, to understand the different contract types. And, you know, as you said, moving forward as a builder, we don't really know what's going to happen. And, you know, us doing this podcast is being transparent and, you know, letting clients know how we're thinking about things at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to be transparent. I've learned over the years, it's a lot harder trying to not be transparent. So it makes life simpler to just tell people how it is and just bite the bullet. And that's my parting advice, is it is what it is. We're in it together.
Deal with it up front.
Absolutely. So thank you, Jeannie.
Thank you so much for sharing that.
And look forward to catching up again soon.
Sounds good. All right. Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to Buildopedia. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating to help other listeners like you find our podcast. For more information, please check out the show notes and connect with us on social media. We would love to hear from you.